climb in and hold on.
We're driving the conversation.
It's the Joel and Thomas Show, powered by Teton Toyota.
Welcome back to the Joel and Thomas Show. Before the break, we were revisiting a case that dominated the headlines back in 2015, and this is a case that is full of twists and turns. It's one of those cases where things aren't always as they seem. Joining me again by phone is Kellyanne Pearson. She is on the phone from Washington, and she has been a devoted advocate and continues that work for baby Dior Coons, who Kelly, as you and I were mentioning, is not a baby anymore. He just had his 11th birthday on December 30th. Kelly, how often do you think about Dior?
Every day. Every day. I have literally grown to waking up in the morning, to going to bed, thinking about this child and how I can help him. It has literally kind of moved to the point of if I was missing my own child. I don't claim he's my child, but if I were missing my own child, what would I do? You know, and I think like that on a daily basis. It's almost like I'm missing a child and I need to help find him quickly. So yeah, every day. Every day.
It is certainly a long, bumpy road that you and all of those who love Dior have been on, and unfortunately there are still a lot of unanswered questions. Kelly, one question I want to throw your direction. I have got to believe that as you're doing this work, you have received criticism. There are probably people who don't understand your commitment to this case because he's not your child. How do you respond to those critics?
Oh, it's easy for me. This case started out with a lot of drama, a lot. You know, like a lot of critics came in and bashed people. They got weaned out. And over the last couple of, you know, the first couple of years, the drama's died down. And I think it's because Dior really does have a strong, connected force behind him that we just do not let the drama bother us. And for me personally, I've had a couple people throw their little, you know, comments at me. But for the most part, and I'm very thankful, I have a lot of support in this case. I mean, a lot. I've probably got thousands that are backing me up. And that's because they see what I see. And, you know, when they have conversations or when someone actually does throw a curveball at me, I have no problem reaching out to them personally and asking them, you know, hey, why don't you just message me personally? We can work this out, you know? And I've done that so many times to where I just don't have any issues anymore in the case, except for, you know, a couple of the family members that aren't on the mom side. Within the family of suspicious, you know? So I just don't let it bother me. I keep forward. I have a mission to do, you know?
And, you know, I love that's the way you're looking at this. And that's why I felt like today's such a great day to revisit this case, because it's the first day of 2024. And the first day of a new year, there's always so much hope and promise. And you are absolutely right. Dior deserves justice. He deserves not to be forgotten. You mentioned in the last segment that you had put together a birthday video for Dior. Where can people see that video?
Well, you can see that video on his website, the one that I was talking about, justiceforbabydior.com. That whole website is full of information, facts only, no speculation. So if you want to know what's going on in the case or what's happened in this case, the great spot to go, and you'll see the tribute that I made for him for his birthday. It's still up on the main page. If you go into photos, you'll see more tributes from over the years, including Christmas. It's just a great place to store all the information, you know.
And you're so right. As these cases start to drag on, it gets harder to keep everything together. I know that as I have worked a lot in that wrongful conviction arena, the true crime, reporting on those things. And so it really becomes crucial to have one spot where all of this information can be found quickly. So what a wonderful thing you have done in creating that. And it does give everyone an opportunity to visit that site and learn more, because this is a case, Kelly, that there's so much to it.
There is. And it's a simple case, though. The thing is about this case versus a lot of cases out there, it is solvable. Very, very solvable. You have most cases out there, you know, there's a lot of twists and turns, and, you know, it would take a lot to solve those cases. But in this case, it's very solvable. That's what also keeps everybody else, including myself, going, because it is a solvable case. It's not, we don't know who did it or, you know, stuff like that. It's just a matter of proving. And once we can do that, then the case will be put to rest. And to be honest with you, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life after that.
I bet you devote so much time to this.
Yeah.
Kelly, as you have been doing this the past 8 years, I'm certain that you've come to know a lot about Dior Kunz and what kind of toddler he was. What can you tell us? What would you want people to know about Dior?
From what I've heard, and I've gathered from family, daycare, and other sources, is that he was a very lovable two-year-old, almost three. His daycare staff, you know, described him as the sweetest little thing. He had his favorite stuffed animal, brown, so I'm going to assume it was his monkey. They weren't sure if it was his monkey. And so he would take that to daycare. He loved his mom. She sang him songs. She, you know, I have no doubt in my mind that his mom loved and loves him still. And his dad, he used to work on cars with his dad. So he really liked being outside and, you know, getting that one-on-one attention from each of his parents. And he really liked Superman. I heard that he likes to put on his little blanket or a cape and run around and pretend he's Superman. And he loved his monkey. He loved his cars. He was definitely a Hot Wheel car kind of kid. Loves his trucks. He just seemed like really was a normal 2-year-old compared to what other people say. You know, he didn't have a speech impairment. He spoke a little less, but not, you know, his learning capabilities were great. Just all around a happy kid.
I'm so glad that you were able to share some of that. As I look back at pictures of him from the time of his disappearance, he just, to me, had such a sweet face. And I'm happy to know a little bit more, because I think that as we can imagine him putting on a blanket and pretending to be Superman or playing with his Hot Wheels or stuffed animals, it gives us a little bit more glimpse into the real tragedy of this loss. Kelly, we have to head to another break, but I would love to keep you on so that you can kind of talk with us about the original story versus what you have discovered that showcases that there's more to this than what was originally reported.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be back.